This is Solidarity Journal. Share in a common voice. You just might find your own. Well, we've made it to June. Summer's right around the corner. Thanks for tuning in. As always, this is Solidarity Journal on WAZU 90.7. And being that summer is so near, starting off this summer right, I'm glad to introduce a new segment. We're calling it the Police State Blues. We'll remind you of the walls closing in around you, the crackdowns on personal expression around our great nation, in the hope that we will someday wake up. As always, we'll recap a week's worth of news. A lot has gone on last week, and this is just a slice. These are your headlines. We'll talk budget as always. Few are thrilled with the new Illinois budget. It cuts less and spends less. There's mixed views on that. We'll touch on those. Illinois gets a final draft of our newly redistricted representative districts. And some say that African American districts have been shortchanged. I spoke to the leader of a local progressive movement here in Peoria, Bill Poorman. Tune in for our conversation later on in the hour. You won't want to miss it. And our first edition of the Police State Blues. From Arizona to D.C., police brutality is rampant, and a few brave citizens defy it on constitutional grounds. Don't miss it later on in this hour. Always a favorite, our weekly retort report with Bradley Adams, taking the conservative spin of our local media and setting it straight. We'll fill you in on a slice of the union and labor news around the state and the nation, with thanks to WIN, Workers Independent News, for those stories. As always, thanks for tuning in to Solidarity Journal on WAZU 90.7 FM. Stay tuned, the news is next.
Fight for a better place. Will you fight for a better place with me? Till the end of this story. Oh, when and all, it all gets written again. Oh, when and all, it all gets written again. And things will never be the same. And things will never be the same. And things will never be the same. Oh, you can feel that constant change. No, things will never be the same for me, my friends.
Illinois' new budget is sitting on Governor Pat Quinn's desk. And while lawmakers are happy to be done crafting it, few are happy with what the 2012 spending plan does. Lawmakers say they had to cut or trim spending for education and human services. Democrat Frank Martino says the new budget forces the state to live within its means, but at a cost.
The people that matter that this will be viewing this budget are those in your community services that are owed hundreds of thousands, if not millions, in dollars on back bills and will have to, even with this budget, lay off their people and cut their level of services. That's the true measure.
Senate Republican Matt Murphy says the spending plan for the next year doesn't go far enough, and all but guarantees that this year's tax hike will be needed for years to come.
A budget was passed by the Democrat majority down here that takes the first step to cementing that tax increase into place to being permanent, just a few months after the Democrats who passed it promised everybody it would be temporary.
Governor Quinn wanted to spend nearly $36 billion. The budget he now has spends $33.2 billion. But even Martino admits that lawmakers will likely have to come back in the fall or early next year and tweak the spending plan. Illinois' new budget may spend less than Governor Pat Quinn's original proposal, but it is higher than this past year's budget and was balanced by delaying the payment of billions of dollars in unpaid bills until this current fiscal year. The governor has been clear that while we put our fiscal house in order, we must continue to protect core priorities, said Kelly Kraft, Quinn's budget spokeswoman. Quinn is reviewing the budget's impact on human services and schools statewide, she said, which were among those items lawmakers trimmed to reduce spending from Quinn's $36 billion budget to a $33.2 billion budget. House Democrat budget architect Frank Martino, a Democrat from Spring Valley, said the new spending priorities include Illinois' $4 billion pension payment. The budget, for the first time, doesn't hide the true cost of the state government by taking the pensions off budget, said Martino. We're making all of our pension payments, which for the past 3 years, we've had to borrow in order to pay. But pension payments are one piece of Illinois' astronomical debt. In the proposed budget, lawmakers did not reduce the $4 billion in old bills on the desk of Illinois Comptroller Judy Barr Topinka. Instead, the state will take longer to pay these bills, including Medicaid payments. State Senator Don Trotter, a Democrat from Chicago, said lawmakers are spending as much as Illinois is expected to take in from taxpayers. This is a revenue-driven budget versus a program-driven budget, which we've had in the past, where we create programs and then tried to find money. State Representative David Harris, Republican from Arlington Heights, said that if Illinois brings in more than $33.2 billion in tax revenue, that extra money will pay for past due bills. Though no one is willing to speculate on how much extra money Illinois could see, Senate GOP budget architect Matt Murphy, Republican from Palatine, said the state will not see anywhere near the $7 billion from this year's 67% personal income tax and 4% corporate income tax hikes, which is propping up the proposed budget. The tax hikes were approved in January and were designed to expire in 2016. This is the first step toward cementing those tax increases into becoming permanent. Just a few months after the Democrats, who passed the tax hikes, promised that it would be temporary. And that's the problem, said Colin Hitt, a policy specialist with the Illinois Policy Institute, a free market think tank. The budget on the governor's desk is a 1% reduction over last year, but it is by no means the frugal budget that many lawmakers were promised after this year's record tax increase. It's clear that we need to pay our taxes, and it's clear that when our government is out of order, in debt, it needs new revenue. And if we want the government to keep functioning, if we want to have proper schools, proper health care standards, if we want to have roads, if we want to have public works, public parks, if we want to have anything public, we're going to need to all chip in to make that happen. And once we've done that, we'll all be able to share in it forever. So I really appreciate what the Democrats have done creating these tax increases, because we need to get things done. We need things to work. We need to have operational government that functions at the will of the people. And that's just all she wrote. As always, we will maintain our ears to the grindstone on budgetary stories out of Springfield. And this can be your home for budget talks, budget news, both state and national. Illinois has lost a representative district. And in fact, the great district of the 18th that Aaron Schock has so long destroyed and devoured with his conservative views as our representative has changed. Its boundaries are different. The legislative redistricting map is drawing concern among Republicans. Both the Illinois House and the Senate passed the map Friday without any Republican votes. Republican representatives and senators are saying there wasn't enough public input and the process was not transparent enough. Republican Representative Roger Eddy.
The real shame here is the fact that we are attempting to describe a process that allows a 364-page amendment to a bill that's going to remap our state that is only about 10 days old to begin with. The real shame here is we're calling that transparent.
Well, Republicans seem pretty pissed. Democrats are insisting that the journey to the proposed map has been transparent. Representative Barbara Flynn Curry is the Democrat who has taken point on the remapping process in the House.
This is, in fact, the fair map. This is a good map and a solid map. It will serve our constituents. It will serve the citizens of Illinois well over the next 10 years. It's a competitive map.
The map only needs Governor Pat Quinn's signature to become law, though it is likely to face a host of legal challenges. political crooks can take the opportunity of redistricting and do something called gerrymandering, where they set up districts so that whoever is already holding the office will continue to have the same office for years to come based on the population and the people within the district. So, for instance, you look at maps and you see maybe some crazy meandering among districts, but, you know, here you are, this district only takes the rich people. Oh, look at that, that's just the area that rich people live in and who will vote for that same person over and over again. They can easily find a representative more easier when they can just create the districts around the type of people who want certain representation. Instead of real debate, real policy debate, real functional representation, you can just create the district out of the blue, out of the certain people that you more easily garnish votes from. With that being said, when it comes to the new legislative maps, some minority interest groups believe African Americans are still getting shorted. The new maps show fewer House and Senate seats where African Americans make up more than 55% of the population. This is what State Representative Marlo Colvin had to say.
I don't know if I totally agree with the total population loss, but what was reported by the census is what we have to draw our new districts on. As a result, I think drawing districts that are equal in population, compact and contiguous, continue to be the law of the land.
Drawing new district lines based on population and U.S. Census reports that show fewer African Americans in Illinois. But Josina Morita with United Congress says that's not true.
A lot of households didn't receive their census forms, didn't fill out their census forms. There are lots of different challenges in terms of how African American communities were counted in the census that also, we believe, had a huge impact on the undercount.
Ease of access or lack thereof to census material and to get your count and make sure you're counted, according to this woman, is what has shown the decrease in African Americans in Illinois. With that being said, it is not that there are less African Americans in Illinois, it's just that they weren't counted in the census, and thus districts, either district riders of the new districts, have either taken that and opportunized on it, or they've drawn them accordingly. Yes, to skewed district data, to skewed census data, but we're looking at two possibilities. Either they've rigged the system, or they've drawn it correctly based on skewed data. And anyway, census and the counting of a population needs to be reformed so issues like this don't happen again, because now we're going to have 10 years of unrepresented minorities until the next census. And hopefully by then, there'll be some sort of reform, maybe an online availability, maybe a large town hall assembly that makes it easier for those, not just people coming door to door. I don't know all about the census, but if we have interest groups standing up and saying that things are a problem, then there's something got to be to it. So I apologize for that audio quality. Apparently she was on the phone when it was recorded. But yeah, check it out. Your district might have changed. Go online and find out where you stand in the new Illinois district map. More news is next.
Freedom, oh, freedom, oh, freedom for you and me. Until then, I will fight.
Well, I'm glad to introduce WAZU listeners to my guest, Bill Portman.
Hi, Zach. How are you?
He's no stranger to radio. Isn't that right?
That's true. I have a background in broadcast, radio, and TV, and spent several years as a public radio reporter in Michigan.
But you're also part of a Central Illinois progressive movement.
That's true. I'm the host, founder and host, of the Peoria chapter of Drinking Liberally.
Yes.
And that name always gets a good chuckle, but and it does involve some drinking, but not always alcohol. We have plenty of teetotalers, too. But basically what it is a social club for liberals and progressives in the Peoria area. There is a national Drinking Liberally organization. It was started several years back in New York. Several people who were feeling on the outs in the Bush administration decided to get together and cry tears into their beers at a bar in New York, and then got the idea that this could spread across the country pretty readily.
And it has spread, hasn't it?
Absolutely. There are hundreds of chapters now across the country. In fact, a few around the world where people have left their local Drinking Liberally chapter and have started it as an expatriate somewhere else. I was part of one in Naperville. In Illinois alone, there are, I should know this, I think we're up to about 8 chapters here in Illinois. I was part of one in Naperville for a short time when we lived there, and then came down here, had experience with it, came down here and started one down here 3.5 years ago.
And it meets every second Tuesday or every other Tuesday?
We meet every other week throughout the year. Our last one was yesterday, the date of which would have been May 31st, and so then we're 2 weeks from there. You can find the latest times at drinkingliberally.org, which is a website for the national organization, and you can go through and find our local Peoria chapter that way. We do it, like I said, every other week, which can be complex to follow, but what's nice is it puts us off cycle with some of the other progressive groups.
And there's a lot of them in Central Illinois, really.
You would be surprised. One of the things I have done as part of Drinking Liberally is try to go around and meet the various progressive groups and see who's out there. And, of course, Peoria has this reputation for being just an incredibly conservative and Republican area, which is true, but there is also a strong progressive community out here. We have very many active groups here in the Peoria area. I mean, I hesitate to rattle off a few because I don't want to miss anybody, but, you know, the Peoria Area Peace Network.
Which has been on Solidarity Journal many times.
Okay, fantastic. And there is, obviously, we have a Green Party here, which is pretty unusual.
Yeah, Sheldon Schaefer runs against Aaron Schock every opportunity he has.
Exactly. And we have... of course, you know, the ACLU, and we have a variety of progressive groups in town. There's, I'm going to get this wrong, Citizens United Against Toxic Waste is
Families.
Another group. Families United.
Oh, wait, Peoria Families Against Toxic Waste.
There we go.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there's the Sierra Club. And
Global Warming Solutions Group.
Absolutely. There's another one. So there are several when you start looking around. And it's a very active community. I've met with many of these people. They're very dedicated.
We just need to
get together more often. This is my opinion now. We just need to get together more often and see what areas that we can work together. That's one of my hopes for Drinking Liberally, is it kind of provides that neutral area where people can come together from all those groups, get together, and look for common cause.
Because the Democrats don't represent the progressives.
Well,
Republicans don't represent the progressives. And if you're growing this progressive body in Central Illinois, they need to have some representation.
We really could use a stronger Democratic wing of the Democratic Party. Is that was that Jim Dean who said that when he ran? We could really use a stronger progressive element to the Democratic Party nationally as well as locally, I believe. Obviously, this has been a Republican, let's just take the congressional district, this has been a Republican congressional district for something upwards to a century. So I think we're fighting a long battle, and I think local Democrats have struggled with that, and they've tried to come along as far as they can. I think a way to really energize things would be to have a strong progressive element to the local Democratic Party. And like we mentioned before, we have the Green Party, too, which is an electoral outlet for progressives. But you know, it's interesting. Electoral success be it with the Greens or a progressive Democratic element, only starts with strong progressive community. Because if all you do is pop up every couple of years and wave your flag and say, hey, you know, we're progressives and we're running, most people are going to look at you like, who are you and why should I care? And I think I'll just check R again.
Yeah, or D.
Or D. Yeah, we need both around here. Just quickly on the whole Republican thing, it's great. We have Democrats. That's a pretty solid percentage of the vote around here. But we are going to have to pull away what I think could easily be frustrated Republicans, too. Looking at Barack Obama's results, I think that's part of what we had, in fact. We had a lot of people who were angry Republicans and conservatives who saw just how off the rails the George W. Bush administration had gone, and they actually voted for Obama. That's not to say that we shouldn't be true progressives, because I think the true progressive message is what's going to win the day. But it's going to take everybody, certainly around here.
And what do you think the true progressive message is?
Freedom for everybody. You know, the Republicans always go around screaming freedom, 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 and they don't mean it. What they really mean is they want private interests, rich private interests, to be in charge. And as long as those people are free, everything's dandy, and the rest of us can serve them at their whim.
Exactly, serve them. But their factories and their stores and their... Yeah.
And in the ballot booth and everywhere else. But progressives, and this represents the entire progressive history, you can start with the anti-slavery movements, the women's movements all the way back in the 19th century. Coming up into the 20th century, we had the civil rights movement, the second women's rights movement. Our entire premise all along has been increasing freedom for as many people as possible. And that goes to our economic policies, too. What is Social Security? You know, everybody talks about entitlements like Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, those kinds of things. You know, those provide services. Sure, those are economic services, but they're about freedom. How free can you be when you're sick? You're not very free at all. So you get sick and you can't get medical care, you're actually trapped by that illness. Now, if we can come up with a system that gives people that medical care, they'll be that much freer. Social Security actually was very much an anti-poverty program for the elderly, because elderly poverty was a huge, huge problem before Social Security was implemented, and it became a way for those people to get out of poverty, and poverty is not as free. I mean, you got to ask yourself, who is freer, especially in economic terms, the wealthy or you?
Yeah.
And obviously, when the system is rigged toward them, they have a lot more freedom.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's easy to define freedom as, like, consumer choice. And when they do that, it creates an apathetic populace, and you don't really care who you vote for as long as you can still decide between Pepsi or Coke or what have you.
Yes, there is the freedom of citizens and then the freedom of consumers.
That's right.
And the freedom of consumers is actually good, okay? I mean, the way that market economies generate a lot of consumer choice, I don't think is such a bad thing. No, it's a good thing. I like having a lot of choice.
It's good, but as long as it's not at the expense of the civil citizen.
Exactly. You always want to emphasize the fact that we are citizens first, that we're all in this together, that we're part of this nation of the United States together, and that we all need to chip in a little for all of us to enjoy those freedoms.
Yeah.
And
couldn't have said it better.
That's the essence, really. I mean, that's the essence of even something as simple as the military, right? We need to protect our borders, you know, and I realize that's an arguable point, and I am not at all advocating for the size of the military we have or running willy-nilly around the world blowing things up. But what I am saying is, if you feel like you have to protect your borders from people who are going to threaten you, we all give a little into something like the military, and we all get that protection back out. That's exactly like the other things, like, again, Medicare, Social Security. We each give a little bit of taxes, and we get guaranteed medical care and avoiding poverty in retirement back out.
Yeah, the same with creating roads and schools.
Absolutely.
We want those things, and we all get to share in them, through taxes.
And right, and taxes are the way we pay the bill. The taxes are the way we guarantee those freedoms, like education, good health, and security for all of us together. You know, the Republicans love to say that freedom isn't free.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, freedom isn't free. They're absolutely right. That's why we all work together to pay our taxes
pay
to
it.
Afford education for everybody, good health for That's everybody, right. all that kind of thing.
So while Tea Partiers and right-wing Republicans are chanting, tax me less, you know, deregulate, that's all to gain what? To gain business freedom and economic freedom at the expense of social liberty and social freedom?
Yeah, I can't say to say that I understand exactly what they want. I mean, you end up with a lot of incoherence in that movement. Mm-hmm. They defend Social Security and Medicare for themselves, but don't want it for anyone else. I mean, I don't understand where they're coming from.
We should find some and talk to them.
You should have some on the show.
Yeah,
that would be,
be ridiculous. It would be great.
Actually, I think they would welcome the opportunity, and it would be a great opportunity.
To learn a little bit about the enemy. You got to keep your friends close and your enemies closer.
There you go.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So how has Drinking Liberally grown, and what do you expect it to do? What do you want its role in the community to be?
It's really come along. We started with about exactly four people, 3.5 years ago, like I said. Last night, which was the last one, we had 23 people there that night, which was a fabulous turnout for us. Our peak, we had about 40 people at the Obama inauguration party that
nice.
We had when he first got elected, first inaugurated. And that was a lot of fun. But on an ongoing basis, we have about 18 people there every couple of weeks. It rotates in. You know, it's very flexible. If you can make it, great. If you can't that night, great. But we generally have about 18 people of a rotating group
Tuesdays.
That come. Tuesdays, right?
6 o'clock.
Tuesdays,
6:30.
Tuesday nights, 6:30 at Kelleher's Irish Pub in downtown Peoria.
And how they've welcomed you with open arms, haven't they?
Yeah, absolutely. No, like they're great.
25 guaranteed.
I have to mention
people.
Angela, who is always there.
The waitress.
Yep, she is always there for us. Has been for a long time. She's great.
She's really nice.
They have absolutely been very welcoming to us and very accommodating.
Did you try other places in the infancy of Drinking Liberally? Did you try to look elsewhere?
It has always been Drinking Liberally because there's something magic about Irish pubs and politics that just go together.
Yeah.
For a while there, I tried to do a Drinking Coffee Liberally, and I held that at a different location, and I did that in the off weeks, and it didn't generate bigger crowds, so I decided to focus my attention. But that doesn't mean that I'm not prepared to do other things with Drinking Liberally. There's a very vibrant community, as we said, across the country of people doing Drinking Liberally projects, and they've come up with various different ways of doing things. Like one, I'd love to get organized, but I just need a venue, is Bleeding Arm Liberals. It's a blood drive.
Really?
So liberals and progressives coming out and giving a little in order to help people a lot.
Right, right.
But you need a venue for that kind of thing, and I'm still exploring how to find a good place to do that because the Red Cross needs to come in and set up for the day, and we need to promote it and that sort of thing.
Yeah, and that being under the banner of progressive thought and progressive politics would be great to show the community what it's really all about.
Absolutely, and emphasis on the community. I mean, this is a community, people coming together to serve the community. And, you know, it's interesting. Another idea behind Drinking Liberally, we don't have, as liberals and progressives, a lot of solid venues to come together and stitch that community together. The analogy I always think of is churches, and mm-hmm. especially conservative churches. You've got this group of people from a diverse set of backgrounds that usually come into their churches, and they knit together and they listen to the messages that come from there, and then they take that community and they go out into the larger area away from their church, and they carry that with them. In the progressive community, also on the conservative side, just to backtrack for a second, there's like Veterans of Foreign Wars, and there's the American Legion, and there's Chambers of Commerce. There are all of these kinds of community outlets for more conservative elements in our society. Liberals and progressives tend not to have that as a general rule, and certainly not, I would argue, in central Illinois. We don't have those kinds of things.
Well, what about farmers markets and CFAs?
That is a great idea, farmers markets especially. But it's how do we stitch that all together into a larger sense of community, I think. How do we pull that all together? I guess what I'm thinking is, like, there are issue area groups like, you know, it could be the local farming movement, it could be the broader environmental movement, it could be economic justice groups, could be women's reproductive rights groups.
So you're saying that progressive things, progressive movements are less unified as the conservatives are more unified.
That's what I believe.
There's factions of progressive thought, like you were just listing off a few, but they need to be under one banner so they have some power.
They're each in their own silo. And somehow we need to start talking to one another and look for ways that we can reinforce one another. We're never going to agree on everything. The conservatives don't agree on everything, but they work together on what they do agree on. And we need to find what that is and move forward with it.
Do you have any agenda to make that happen?
I have started talking to some progressive groups. I did some of this last year. I'm going to continue to do this year. An idea, at least a website that I have up and running, is called PeoriaProgressive.org. Right now it is a blog and lists area progressive groups, and I'm trying to get a calendar together of progressive events in the Peoria area. So at least we would have a common information resource to go from. And then I think from there, we just need to continue to find those ways to work together to develop, again, progressive community. And then from that base of an activated progressive community, we're able to start having some electoral success. Be it progressive Democrats or Greens, we can start having that electoral success.
That's the ultimate goal.
It is. I mean, that is what we have to get to. Yes, it's the ultimate goal in terms of it's important. It's extremely important. But I think the ultimate goal is changing hearts and minds. Conservatives in the last 30 years have been extremely successful at changing American culture and emphasizing certain American values over other American values. And that ultimately is the battle we need to fight. We can't necessarily get bogged down in electoral politics or specific issues or specific policies if there is no worldview, if there is no moral worldview at work that is more broadly accepted. And man, the conservatives have been hammering on that morality idea and worldview idea and American values. And at least my opinion is we haven't done enough to fight in that. We fought on these policies, we fought on these issues, but we really need to change our approach to how we convince people about their values and what they should be doing. And then electoral success will come. Not, obviously, there's a lot of work to do. I mean, elections are not easy at all. But rather than swimming upstream, we'd be swimming downstream.
Well, that's great. Yeah, you got to get that calendar of events up on your blog, PeoriaProgressive.org.
Yeah, like everything on the progressive side, it's basically an all-volunteer effort. Myself and a couple other people are really trying to get that going. It's all set up. It's just being able to constantly get it going and keep it refreshed, which, of course, is always a challenge in time-starved and money-starved progressive causes and issues and efforts. But we do what we can, because what other choice do we have?
That's right. You know, as Rick and Liberally, we touched on, in the conversations I was having with some of the members, we touched on apathy. Well, what could you say that erodes a progressive movement more than apathy does? And how can you combat against it?
Apathy amongst progressives who are like acknowledged, dedicated progressives and liberals, or apathy amongst the wider electorate?
The wider electorate.
The wider electorate. Well, boy.
And
I mean, that's tough.
If you can find the cause of it, what could you say the cause of apathy would be?
You know, I think that's one of the hardest things I have to understand. Being someone, my background is as a journalist. I've been plugged into public affairs for so long. It's hard to understand the mindset of people who kind of just don't care. But if I had to take a first crack at it, it would be getting at the things that affect them in their daily lives. Because let's face it, most people just want to lead their daily lives. They want to be able to get by through their day, take care of their families, do the things that they need to do to live and maybe live comfortably along the way. And you know what? That's what I want for everybody too. I mean, really, that's all we're hoping for. And from that base, you can explore whatever you want. That's an element of freedom. If you've got that base in your own life, then you can begin to explore who you want to be and what you want to do in your community.
Exactly.
But that really, I believe, is all people want. So you've got to understand that they just want to be able to live their lives, and they need the stuff of life. So how does that relate back to policy? Well, this recent threat to end Medicare as we know it, that's woken people up. You know, Medicare is an incredibly popular program because seniors and many people younger get that they aren't going to get medical care when they get older if these kinds of programs aren't in place. And the voucher scheme just isn't going to keep pace with medical inflation. So it's going to be the end of that health care that people want. That goes that goes straight to people's lives and their daily life and their daily living. And those are the kinds of things I think maybe we need to begin emphasizing at first. Plus the appeals to, again, moral values, the appeals to a worldview of, hey, we are all in this together. We need to work together to guarantee these liberties and freedoms for all of us. And it's just not going to work anymore, this idea that if you take care of the wealthy, they'll take care of you. A modified form of serfdom. We need to, we need to come up with a way to tell people about a new, not even a new, just tell people about progressive values in a way that relates to them.
So attacks on progress by conservatives have woken up people to see, you know, the power they have and to take it back. But why have they been asleep anyway?
Huh.
Why has the agenda and this manipulation of power and of the American people and the electorate gone by so long to make us believe that we can just all bask in this daydream and not really see the civics around us and the power we have?
Well, I think the conservative movement is very good at selling its wares. So I think that's one thing.
Political machine.
Yeah. They're very good at communicating their messages in ways that it seems like it is taking care of you and appealing to your life.
Yeah.
Even if it's not.
Right.
So I think that's one element. I think a second element is that we had a general buy-in across the powerful in the U.S. and worldwide, into this idea that if you take care of the wealthy, everyone else will be taken care of. And that included the Republicans and the Democrats as political parties. It included all conservatives, and it included many liberals. And so we kind of had this whole way of thinking take root amongst the people who tend to generate messages and have loud megaphones. And when it stopped working, these folks were so far down that path that how could they go back on themselves? It takes, you know, to say, hey, I was wrong, is more than most people can bear.
Rule them by fooling.
There's a lot of fooling, yeah, going on. Absolutely. Well, if you're hearing this, look for ways to get active. Look for ways to hook into the local progressive community here in the Peoria area. One of my central ideas behind starting drinking liberally here in the Peoria area was essentially to say, you're not alone.
Yes.
And you know what? You're not. So all of these things that you've been thinking and your coworkers and your family members and these other people, you think, oh, I can't possibly say that. They'll think I'm crazy or they'll throw me out or I'll catch all kinds of flack for whatever that is. Well, come on down to drinking liberally if that's your kind of thing. It's a friendly and open atmosphere. You don't need to worry about being on top of your game, on top of every issue. We have people that just come and listen.
Yeah.
And that is perfectly fine. Come, listen and learn. Throw in your two cents when you feel that's appropriate. But it's a way to get plugged into the progressive community. If that's not necessarily kind of your thing, you could find one of the issue groups, you know, be that environmental or civil justice or
fair trade, Global Village.
Absolutely. Any of those kinds of things. Find a way to get plugged in. Even the smallest commitment at least plugs you in.
Yeah.
And it's only by all of those small stitches of people together that we'll actually be able to create a large progressive movement here in the Peoria area.
A community.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to thank Bill Portman for coming to ICC, coming to the studio and talking with us. He's a great guy. You should catch him at Drinking Liberally. Hopefully you could get behind some of his efforts if you're a progressive, if you're progressively minded, and get behind some of the local efforts that he's spearheading, and be a part of a community. Don't be shy. Don't be shy at all. Solidarity Journal and WAZU looks forward to working more with Portman and the Progressive Area Movement. Stay tuned. More news is next.
I'm at Wine Country French Toast in Peoria Heights, where a wine tasting is taking place to benefit the people of Boteri, Haiti, sponsored by the Haiti Mission and Connection Incorporated, supporting a clean drinking water project, the elementary school, and a medical clinic in Boteri, Haiti. Okay, I'm with Sheldon Schaefer, who is the coordinator for this event. Sheldon, can you tell our listeners how you got involved?
Well, I got involved actually through Dr. Martha Willey, and she was my wife's eye doctor, and we got involved in the Haiti Mission Group. We went to Haiti with them, and then after another year, we were on the board of the group. The group supports a small outpost kind of village, a really remote village, where we support a full-time nurse and a clinic, and a clean water project in 400 homes. And whatever's left over goes to the school. So, you know, it's a pretty ambitious for a small group, but I'm on the board, and then we were just brainstorming for fundraisers and said, gee, wine tasting seemed to be really big these days. Let's try it. And we did it last year for the first time, and it was great. And you can tell, you know, there's 55 happy people here and enjoying everything that, you know, enjoying all the good wines, plus also enjoying helping Haiti projects we have.
How can our listeners get involved and or make a donation?
You can go to HaitiMissionConnection.org. So HAITI MissionConnection.org, and you'll find the website, and you can give from the website. And I don't have the P.O. box on me right now, so I think the best is to go through the web.
There's been a little bit of controversy as far as funds not getting to the right place in Haiti, or people complaining that things never improve in Haiti. How can people who donate funds be assured that their contribution will get to where it's needed?
Well, certainly from an event like this, you can be assured, because the proceeds all go to the group, direct to the people. There's no middle person. And when we send a group down there, our volunteers, we all pay our own way. So there's no overhead. There's no administration. It's all volunteer. So if you give it to some of the smaller groups, then you definitely know it goes straight to have immediate impact. Now, why do things not change in Haiti despite all the aid that goes there? Well, and as a former Peace Corps volunteer, I can say it's really, you can't appreciate the hurdles and the challenges in a developing country like Haiti unless you've seen a lot of developing countries. When I went to Haiti a few years ago, I was astounded at the lack of infrastructure. It's just so many hurdles and obstacles to overcome. And it just makes the task all the harder. You know, someday things will change, but first you have to work on infrastructure while you're trying to maintain just sanitary conditions and create education opportunities. And, you know, it's no single thing, but it was stunning. When I was in India 40 years ago, Haiti was not even up to the level of rural India 40 years ago. And when you're dealing with that lack of infrastructure, that lack of development, that lack of local resources, everything just becomes a million times harder. And that's why it seems like nothing ever gets done.
We talked earlier about Boteri being close to the border of the Dominican Republic and Haiti. And you can actually stand at the border and look at the lush greenness of the Dominican and then the vast barrenness of Haiti. What's your explanation for that?
Well, it's just years of neglect, and certainly when the French were in control of Haiti, they were not, so, you know, they ravaged the land and didn't, unlike the British, say, in India, who left substantial infrastructure and improvements. The French never did that. So they left a land destitute where, you know, all they could do for just basic fuel was to turn to the forests. And, you know, it's had its impact. And then there wasn't enough input into Haiti to replenish the forests until very recently. And there are some projects like ours, you know, other small groups that are working on replanting in Haiti. But it's such a tremendous amount of work that needs to be done.
Okay, thank you, Sheldon.
Certainly.
Enjoy your wine. Have a good evening.
Thank you.
Police State Blues. I've got the Police State Blues. Introducing a brand new segment, the Police State Blues. Pointing out some injustices orchestrated by the police force, which has ever-increasing power due to the Patriot Act. In Washington, D.C. at the Jefferson Memorial, 7 people were arrested for dancing, and others were body slammed for the crime of movement. Now this is a pretty short segment, because that's about it. That's all I got for, the Police State Blues, but just the actual fact that these people, they went into the Jefferson Memorial and they were dancing about. There's audio, there's video of it on the internet. There's men just, you know, kind of jiving. There's men and women who are slow dancing. They were doing it as an act of defiance to prove that the police state exists. You can find the video of it at codepink.org. But the fact of the matter is no law enforcement can ever have the right to stop you from expressing yourself. I really do look forward to exploring this Police State Blues segment. I look forward to bringing forth hard-hitting evidence of the police state in which we live in, and a lack of self-expression, and the crackdown of humanity, basically. The putting into a box of all that is human, and all that is self-expression, and all that is constitutionally granted, constitutionally awarded to people in the right of freedom of speech, freedom of expression, freedom of the press, freedom of religion, all those areas slowly becoming, the walls are coming around them, and less is legal. So while these 7 people proved that while you can't dance in the Jefferson Memorial, what can you do? What soon will you not be able to do? Thanks to increased authoritarian ideologies, we're now feeling the pressure. And I look forward to next week's segment, as this has been very short, spur of the moment. I look forward to further researching crackdowns on personal expression and personal freedom in and around our nation. When we consider what happened at Western Illinois University, when the police came in riot gear with tear gas and took over a block party, restrained citizens, complete abuse of power. And it also, it got, sure, I think it got national headlines, but no one's asking the question of why. No one's asking the question of how could you. No one's asking the question of how did we get this far to allow such injustices. We should have a more diplomatic approach within our domestic policy. You know, I'm going to examine all the areas in which these injustices flourish. Now let's go to Bradley Adams and the Retort Report, taking the conservative spin of our local media and setting it straight.
Hello, my name is Bradley Adams, and welcome to the Retort Report on WAZU and Solidarity Journal, where I catch the capitalist spin and set it straight. Recently, the Peoria Journal Star's opinion page published an editorial entitled, "Governor Should Sign School Reform Bill with Some Cautions." I believe that although the entire bill could be termed Wisconsin Light, it is still a bad bill that weakens hard-fought union victories and should not be signed into law by Governor Pat Quinn. Mike Bailey and his staff have unfairly supported the parts of this terrible bill that would weaken job security by making it easier for teachers to be fired, would also make seniority virtually meaningless, and make it harder for teachers to strike by requiring 75% of a union's members to vote in the affirmative. Also, a longer school day and year could ultimately be pursued. They have little objection to making it tougher to get tenure, which is a protection not afforded employees in other industries. But if it were, perhaps some superior colleagues wouldn't have recently had their positions eliminated at the Journal Star. They also state that anything the state can do to lengthen the school day and calendar in Peoria without breaking the bank, which is already broken, by the way, particularly in areas with large percentages of poorer students, is welcome and necessary if this state and nation are to meet their global educational and economic challenges. Well, this is ridiculous. Wouldn't kids who are already economically challenged before they ever set foot in a classroom, and who, as they grow older, see little future for themselves in this society, be more likely to drop out than to be subjected to increased structure that they don't see as working for them in the first place? And why must teachers bear the brunt for sociological problems that are out of their control? The Journal Star seems to be on the right track by cautioning their readers about the law of unintended consequences, like veteran teachers becoming victims of budget biases just because they earn more. Perhaps this is what happened to their former co-workers. Bailey and Company admit that there does seem to be a pattern nationwide of trying to neuter organized labor, and wonder what happens when employees have no leverage at all, and further question why the legislature isn't taking on administrator compensation. Additionally, the Journal Star stands up to the hypocritical backers of this bill, Stand for Children, who say they know the quality of the teachers, and not informed and involved parents are the most important factor in achieving great student outcomes. And they again question why legislators don't confront that issue. Well, here's why. Stand for Children is nothing more than a union-busting pack with a misleading, warm and fuzzy name, which is funded by corporate donors who stand more for profits through the weakening of unions than they do for children. And once again, the Illinois legislature has been bought and paid for by these heinous influences. Instead of calling out these irresponsible legislatures in the House and the Senate who voted in veto-proof majorities, and wishy-washy union leaders who helped draft this member-betraying measure, stunningly, the concluding view of the opinion writers is that Governor Quinn should just cave in and sign it. Coincidentally, the Our View staff point out that on the same day these so-called reforms were passed, the House also voted to cut $166 million in aid to schools, 2.3% less than they're getting this year, which already isn't nearly enough. They merely call this lamentable, especially in early childhood instruction, which is eyeballing a 5% reduction and will undoubtedly lead to increased juvenile crime down the road. But rationalize that it's just education's turn, and the legislature could go farther and may have to. Now here's my view. My view is that Journal Star publisher Ken Mauser, opinion editor Mike Bailey, and deputy opinion editor Chris Kergard, how's that for an ironic name, care less about the teachers of Central Illinois and more about their corporate advertisers, whose greed and unwillingness to pay their fair share in taxes is the actual cause for this crisis. It is also my view that PJ Star parent company Gatehouse Media should be legally obligated to change its name to Gatekeeper Media, for they certainly are gatekeepers to the truth. And once again, shame on the Journal Star for publishing such tripe. And that, my brothers and sisters, has been another dissection of a dead conservative argument which has been given new life by Illinois' corrupt bipartisan legislature. Until next week, this is Bradley Adams on behalf of the Retort Report, WAZU, and Solidarity Journal, wishing you peace, love, and truth.
You're listening to Win the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. Organizers of a labor rally in Erie, Pennsylvania on Saturday intended to show solidarity between unions currently in negotiations with General Electric. They expected more than 1,000 workers to show up, but when more than 3,000 filled the Hammer Mill Center at Gannon University, the organizers said they were surprised. 10 unions have been in negotiations with GE since May 23rd. The current contract offered by GE would end the defined pension plan for new hires and implement a health care plan that doubles the cost for workers. Outside of the contract, another issue that was highlighted at Saturday's rally was GE's profit-making while not paying taxes. According to a recent report in New York Times, GE saw $14.2 billion in worldwide profits in 2010, with $5.1 billion thanks to U.S. operations. GE reported that it only paid 7.4% in taxes on those U.S. profits. What GE pays in taxes is barely a third of the average of other major corporations. Further upsetting workers is that GE has reduced U.S. employment by 22,000 jobs since 2007, even while President Barack Obama has tapped GE chief executive Jeffrey Immelt as U.S. job czar. Meanwhile, a couple states away in Wisconsin, Walkerville returned to the Capitol. Walkerville is a tent city of sorts that originally popped up during the first 30 days of protests at the Wisconsin Capitol. This week, Walkerville returned, surrounding the Capitol, to protest the governor's deep budget cuts. Doug Cunningham spoke with some of the first residents of this new Walkerville.
Betsy Kippers, vice president of the Wisconsin Education Association Council, was one of the first people setting up tents in Walkerville.
Since we are no longer able to voice our protests inside the Capitol building, we decided to set up a tent city outside the building to make sure people are hearing our voices against Governor Walker's budget, which is being dealt with this week. So we are going to be out here until the budget is done, and we are going to have our voices heard about the damage that Governor Walker is doing to the citizens of this state with his budget.
Beth McClure was erecting a tent with her husband and two small children.
Close to $800 million of education cuts are a real concern for us. Medicaid cuts, the national level, the conversation about Medicare. I just hope that this brings more attention to the issues of income inequality and the fact that we as a country have decided to give benefits to wealthy corporations and wealthy individuals while middle class and working class people are paying for the Great Recession.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Well, that does it for this hour and this week. Check us out next week. We'll follow up with Peoria Families Against Toxic Waste and the Illinois Supreme Court battle they're involved in. As always, leaving you with a song, this one by Mos Def. Peace and solidarity, Peoria. Until next time.
Drown you in propaganda that they spit through the speakers. And if you speak about the evil that the government does, the Patriot Act attract you to the type in your blood. They try to frame you and say you was trying to sell drugs and throw a federal indictment on niggas to show you love. This shit is run by fake Christians, fake politicians. Look at their mansions and look at the conditions you live in. All they talk about is terrorism on television. They tell you to listen, but they don't really tell you their mission. They funded Al-Qaeda and now they blame the Muslim religion. Even though Bin Laden was a CIA tactician, they gave him billions of dollars and they funded his purpose. Fahrenheit 9/11, that's just scratching the surface.
Bin Laden didn't blow up the projects. It was your tell the show for
knock down the tower.
Tell the show for
knock down the tower.
Tell the show. Bin Laden didn't blow up the projects. It was your tell the